You're listening to Podcast on Fire. It's Asian cinema in a podcast with your hosts, the magnificent trio of Stu, Ken, and Mike.
Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire, episode 84. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me this evening, we've got Ken.
Hello, everybody. Welcome me back.
Yeah, everybody. Feeling better?
I do.
Back top form?
Yeah, pretty much.
Good, good. Yeah, we're actually on the in-between period here of between Christmas and New Year's. So we do wish everyone has had a very Merry Christmas, had a good time, and we're still continuing to wish you a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.
And this is actually going to be a test, but it's not really, because we're going to stick with it, really. And we're going to start a new formula for the show where we're actually just going to focus on our last movies watched, rather than having a subject attached to each episode. And when it is just our last movies watched, it's more of a relaxed schedule, a relaxed show.
Yeah, I imagine people like to hear from us in some shape or form. So it's just a way for us to not go long periods of time between each special show or each show period.
Yeah, because when it gets to the point where we're getting tweets wondering if we were still alive, we kind of thought, well, we better pick up those headphones again.
Did you actually?
No.
Okay.
Well, actually, since the last show, we discussed our top movies of the year with V Cinema's John and Rufus. And Ken, you never got the chance to join us that night. Would it actually make more sense now to reveal your list of the top three sleaze movies?
Oh, yeah.
You want to run with that one just now?
Absolutely. I did this top five on Facebook, and I actually didn't do anything on my site, neithersogoodreviews.com or Sleazy K's video. I just posted a thing on Facebook because, you know, what the hell? It's a sufficient format. I really enjoyed your discussion between the three of you on the V Cinema show of your top fives because they were so different in nature because we have different tastes. You know, John has specific taste, Rufus has, and you do, and specific focus on Asian cinema, specific focus on country as well. And I have a specific focus when it comes to Asian cinema, and it's category three and erotica and gore and violence and exploitation. So rather than do a full top 10 of that, or do a top 10 of movies I've seen and reviewed this year, which would be a mixed top 10, because I started full on reviewing these category three movies like half a year into 2010. So therefore, top five, it makes sense. So number three, and it's kind of topical as I explain why, and it's a movie called False Lady, which is actually in essence a category three remake of the Blake Edwards movie Switch with Ellen Barkin. I think it was made like 88, and Blake Edwards fairly recently passed away. It's essentially Ellen Barkin doesn't appear until later in the film because it starts out the lead is a male character and he dies but reincarnates himself in a woman's body. And I don't think Blake Edwards would be turning over in his grave knowing a Hong Kong movie with category three intentions based on his movie existed. Because it's actually, you know, it has expressed adult intentions, obviously. Charlie Cho is in it. But at the core, it's actually a rather sweet romance that develops between the character played by Michael Chu and Shan Wing Chi, which is the female lead that male character. He inhabits her body. And it's a real breezy, sweet feel to this naughty movie. But it came from a place where the director and especially the producer, Ho Fun, which is one of the best erotica directors, especially visually, they wanted to produce a real little movie, and they did. So I actually recommend getting False Lady, because it's, you know, it has plentiful of nakedness and Charlie Cho weirdness, and you have to mention what Charlie Cho does in this movie. He plays a boss, and he gets together with his secretary a whole lot. She's called Milka. And in one scene, he milks her breasts for so he has milk in his tea or coffee.
Oh.
And that's what Charlie Cho does.
Oh.
You know, it watching like so many movies with him, it becomes really, really clear that filmmakers and all that just gave him, you know, it was not a tight leash, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just be Charlie Cho. Like Dean Sheck was essentially just be Dean Sheck. And Charlie is always to be, he's supposed to be admired because he has no shame whatsoever. You know, no one else goes for it as hard as Charlie Cho does. He does get his comeuppance in this one because he is cheating on his wife, in actuality. So he doesn't go unpunished, which is all good and fun. So False Lady from 1993, most of these movies are highly recommended. So do you mind if I save the top one for later in the show?
You could reveal it at the end if you want, man.
Yeah, so we'll just do a second one on that list. And if you read the Facebook thing on my So Good Reviews fan page, you can check for yourself. But on the number two spot in the movie I discussed on the show, actually, A Chinese Torture Chamber Story 2, which is this rather neglected sequel to the Wong Jing-produced Gore and Goof Fest from 1994 with the famous Elvis Choi, Julie Lee, kung fu sex fight in the forest. You know, that people think, well, it's like a parody of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but it was way before Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and it's a wonderful, creative movie, the first one. The second one is dark. And the funny thing is, it's essentially a remake of the story covered in Chang Chieh's The Blood Brothers, the Dick Long, David Chang, Chen Kuan Tai film. But the means of portraying the story of Blood Brothers is, of course, they're, of course, way smaller. It's a cheaper film. But it really is good because this underrated director, despite him having the English name Dick Cho, he has some chops. And I've seen many movies that he's done where, you know, he's been definitely above average in this field of category three cinema. And he delivers like good looking and disturbing imagery in this classic tale of broken brotherhood and lust for power. You know, it's that classic template. And what you got to watch out for in this movie, because it is really, really tough to watch, watch out for harsh uses of a paintbrush and a steel penis. The latter is a torture chamber device. And that goes up, you know where, in both the males and the females. But it's actually rather good and well made. But the number one spot we'll save for at the end of the show.
Alright, so with that, we could go right into our last movies watched. And for me, one of the first movies I watched, I think it was actually just before we recorded our Christmas episode, I got a quick chance to watch The Five Deadly Venoms.
Oh, yeah.
I think to some, it's been quoted as one of the best old school kung fu films ever made, which has been directed by Chang Chi. This is really the point where I say the title of the movie and Mike Banner continues the rest of the show explaining it for us. But
yeah, telling him, telling us how much he loves it. But before you do your review, not everybody loves it, Michael. I don't.
Oh, you're just beating him.
And that's like, you know, the mortal sin of, you know, you can't dislike the Venoms, but you can. But I'm curious to hear your opinion, though.
Yeah, I can see it actually being assassinated toad style. But at first, story wise, it wasn't what I was expecting at all. I was really expecting it maybe like the sense of like five Chinese Batmen, sort of like crime fighters, just who are hidden under masks. But
Venoms.
Exactly, like
that kind of thing.
Aye, dubbed by Adam West. But no. In this case, for the people that aren't aware of the plot, Dragon Dynasty have it down as the dying master of a notorious poison clan assigns his final martial arts student one last epic quest to find his five most mysterious and dangerous disciples, each trained in a different fighting style, each hiding under an assumed identity, and bring them together, or bring them to justice.
Yeah, that's a plot synopsis, sir.
So it is just a case of the student trying to reunite these five Venoms, but it turns out there is actually a few sour apples in the barrel. The Venoms aren't all fighting for good. There's a few pricks, yes. But it was actually quite good, and it does, it gives you this added mystery because it doesn't outright reveal who the five Venoms are, like in the opening credits. So there is some mystery, even all the way up to the like the final fight. There's still one character that hasn't had his identity revealed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it does do it quite well in that sense. But it was a good film. The action was good, and aye. I've never been the strongest person for Shaw Brothers movies, so...
Well, it's easy entertainment to you, I sense, and therefore, you know, you don't need to be a five-paragraph scholar on the subject. You know what I mean? So don't worry if you can't speak elaborately about that stuff.
Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm saying, I can't rate it too highly either, because I don't have the benchmark when it comes to Shaw Brothers movies. There's mm-hmm. some that I can rate highly above others, but... It was a good film, and it's Shaw Brothers is in my territory, so it is a little bit of a throw off when there's so many people in the movie that I don't actually recognise and I could relate to, because it's not in the sense where it's like, oh, it's Lunkarian, or like you could see like Yim Bue in the background.
Mm.
It is definitely the Shaw Brothers camp, not the Golden Harvest. Golden Harvest movies work so much better for me because you do see so much more familiar faces, and you do know there's more work behind the scenes to it, but...
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, it was a good film altogether, so...
Oh,
I wouldn't call it a bad movie.
Yeah. It actually, for me, it always sparks a discussion about the different sides to Chang'e, and I think you can draw upon this a little bit when I say the following. The Five Venoms feels definitely different to One-Armed Swordsman.
Oh, aye.
And it's this, essentially, I wouldn't say Shaw Brothers is my territory either, but I know what I like and dislike. And I don't like this direction that Chang'e took around this time when bringing in this Taiwanese opera performance, which the likes of Philip Kwok with his nice stubble. It almost became a trademark, his stubble, I think. They were picking opera performance, and I never really liked the direction the movies took, the feel of the movies, where, you know, Five Venoms to me is rather cool, but underwhelming considering it has a reputation. It's a fan favorite because it did get play all around the world with the English dub and on the TV in America and all that. Mm-hmm. And the Venoms has always been popular as selling points for bootlegs and all that. But I never really liked the feeling from this latter day Chang'e period, which I've seen maybe three or four movies from, but this and like Flag of Iron, which has part of the Venom's troupe, if you will, it's just boring films with I don't know. So someone told me these films have plastic heroes, and it's kind of in a literal sense as well. So I never really liked them visually either. There's something, you know, I preferred the One-Armed Swordsman late 60s to early mid 70s era from Chang'e, because his desire back then was to be a bit more dramatic.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, it was in the sense where they are considered the Five Venoms, but they were never really a group. And when it does spring off all these Five Venom movies, whereas like it's the Crippled Avengers, but it's not really a Venoms movie, it's just the same actors put into it, but I would even consider them a group unless it's the title stating it.
Because yeah, it kind of became that way in the West, you know.
Because that's what I was thinking, is like five superheroes together. So that's why I thought, is that obviously if they put into another movie, it is, in another sense, kind of considered another one of those movies. But fuck, they didn't even get along. So,
but I think it kind of it was good that it became that way, because tracking back to what you were saying about not recognizing the people in Shaw Brothers movies, that was a way for people to... you know, to recognize, the guys from those movies. So I think if that just cropped up via the viewers or someone at the marketing in America full of various Venoms movies said, you know what, we're going to retitle this to the Venoms movie because people would like to recognize the people from the Five Deadly Venoms, and there we are. So, so I don't think that's generally a bad thing, but having said all that about not liking Chang'e's work at this time, I'm still going to go through it eventually. Kid with the Golden Arm might be good. Crippled Avengers sounds cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because I think one of the Crippled Avengers gets like a robotic arm, or a metal arm at least, and that's like, cool. I mean, that sounds cool. Flag of Iron's just talky, talky, talky bullshit. Nothing happens and it's long. long sell. Five Element Ninja. Sounds great. Chinese Super Ninjas is an AK for it. You know, beforehand it sounds great, and therefore I will go into it. Some movies don't look appealing and sound appealing beforehand, and that's also a problem. But for me, Chang-Chi's strongest period is that late 60s to mid 70s era. And probably the last movie that really has this stamp that I like with Chang-Chi is Disciples of Shaolin, or From Shaolin, I always forget what it is, but the Fu Sheng drama. And I heartily recommend that to you if you go into the movie thinking that it's going to be action, but it's not going to be an action movie. It's kind of a melodrama. And if you've seen The Barefoot Kid, you know essentially what the story's about. It's a remake, Barefoot Kid, of Disciples of Shaolin.
All right.
But they're way different movies. Barefoot Kid is a bit more waifu, obviously, but still strong. It's a good movie.
Okay, cool.
Do you remember that from from One on Swordsman, liking that it was more serious in tone and a bit more dramatic?
The thing with One Armed Swordsman was really my introduction to Chang-Chi. It was possibly that or...
Oh, Blood Brothers?
Nope. Well, seeing that, it was probably the first Shaw Brothers I did get my hands on on VHS, but it was Alexander Fu Sheng and Chen Kwan Tai. It was Burning Shaolin Temple, and it meets the Fong Saiyuk.
Yeah, it might be one of the Shaolin movies, Shaolin Temple or Shaolin Martial Arts.
No, it's... I keep wanting to say Warriors 2, but it's not. It's Heroic Duo.
There was a Heroic Duo, but it's almost like this show. We're going to find out, dude. We're going to find out.
Yep. And it's being Googled. No, that's the fucking Ikin Cheng film, you tits.
Yeah, I didn't know there might have been a Heroic Duo back then too, so that's why I didn't like, you are a tit! Heroes 2?
Heroes 2, that's it.
That's right. 74.
That's like in the top favourites for me when it comes to Shaw Brothers movies. That One-Armed Swordsman, King Boxer, that is my benchmark, really. You're going to have to fucking try and beat that if you want me to like the movie.
Yeah, but it's definitely. I'm glad you like those because I feel that those qualities in Chang-Chi go unmentioned quite a bit because his reputation is still the martial arts movies. But he was really solid as a dramatic storyteller without being the melodramatic, like the loud melodramatic storyteller. Disciples of Shaolin is done through grave bloodshed and very evident. It's very evident what's happening, but it's still, a subdued film with symbolism and all that. And I really, really dig it. Never fucking watch it in English. I did, and the dramatic intention didn't really survive because it deserved a better English dub than it got. So do watch it in Mandarin with English subtitles, and you'll be impressed by Fu Sheng as well. That he really fits Disciples of Shaolin as that. He is the barefooted kid, the gullible, naive kid who's the power he gets goes over his head, obviously, like in the Aaron Kwok movie, the barefoot kid. So I can't say enough about Disciples of Shaolin.
So my second movie for this week was. Finally catching up with one of the original Hong Kong Legend releases we had over here. It had always been one that escaped me. I never saw it in store, so I finally actually got around to renting Legend of a Fighter.
Ah, yeah.
Like the Yun Clan's story of Fok Yung Gap.
The by now kind of familiar story to us Westerners.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I do love how the movie had originally started off with, is it Sonny Yun?
I haven't seen it, but everybody's in it.
I know, I get my Yuns mixed up so much, and it is the skinny main dude from In the Line of Duty 4.
Right, Sonny is in that, I believe. It's a Yun Clan movie also, so he's bound to
me. This was the lead dude, and he got his... And he was basically getting his ass kicked. He was weak, and... In order for the family refused to teach him martial arts in Legend of a Fighter because you're weak, you're going to be no benefit to us. So he ends up getting taught English by Yakuzuki Karata, who's a teacher, but he also secretly teaches him martial arts as well.
Is this, by the way, the young version of the main character, Fok Yong-gap?
It is.
Okay, because it's actually Yun Yat Cho, which is doesn't have an English name, so it's not Sunny Yun, by the way. Okay. But now I know what you mean.
Aye, aye. So, like, here's the skinny version, and by the time he's learned his martial arts, so that's the fast forward 2 years later, and he's turned into fucking Lan Kar Yan. That's one way to fucking beef up from one to the other.
Like, yeah, think of Final Affairs, you know, the growth that those characters, the growth that happens in them. One, they turn into Andy Lau and Tony Lau.
Okay, if you went from him to Lan Kang Yang, you just basically turned into pure muscle. And surprisingly, no beard.
Yeah.
So, it was, I admit, I ended up just watching the movie dubbed, and it does have one of those classic, like, offensive dubs. But it's also, like, funny in the sense where you do get the guessing game of, you hear the people that have done dubbing in, like, Drunken Master and Snake in the Eagle Shadows, it's like the same voices come back. And
it's a seasonal movie. It was made at the same company, too.
By MCN. Aye. So yes. It does have a great welcome and appeal, but it's just the harshness where... There is one point where a person asks a question and replies back going, fuck you! And it's like, it's like, what's wrong with you? You've shit your pants! And it's like, there's no shame! There's no shame! It is a great movie, and it's like, the plot of it is just the fucking one line IMDb provide for you. It's like a background story to a Bruce Lee movie.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Very, very helpful. But it is. It does strike similar chords with Fist of a Legend and Fist of Fury, and Yakuzuki Karata is in top form in this movie as well. He is, like, really the force to be reckoned with in that film.
Mm.
And there's none. Well, it is a classic to most people, and you could see why, like, Hong Kong Legends went for it, but I was actually surprised they chose that one so early on in their company's beginning, because I'm positive that was one of the first movies they released. I do know, like, they probably, that might have worked in the sense that they had the strong start by showing off like Jackie Chan movies with Drunken Master, Snake in the Eagle Shadow, and Island of Fire. Like, maybe if you had enough earnings off of that, you slipped in the occasional other film to educate people. Like, Adam Terrell's sense for, his plan when releasing Teenage Hooker, and then following it with, like, a release of Oasis.
Mm.
So, like, the thought about the releases.
Yeah, it was always, because it was never a commercial movie, or rather as known as other seasonal movies, like Drunken Master, as you said. So they slipped in Legend of a Fight out of their own desire, I guess, Hong Kong Legends had their own desire. And because they were new at that time, they just couldn't put any Yuen Bo Ping related quotes all over the cover as such, and I don't think they did.
It would have been all dolled up to the, like, Matrix and Kill Bill together, and they would have photoshopped Lan Kar Yang into the yellow tracksuit, and his head over Uma Thurman's body.
Yep,
that's our cover art.
Yeah, but that would betray what I gather is quite a serious movie. Actually, I mean, you listen to the English dub that made some moments. Funny when they shouldn't have been, but I always gather that it was a rather serious movie.
Oh, it does. It does turn quite melodramatic at times.
Mm-hmm.
And actors, it could get away with that stuff. Yeah. Like, these movies do these things, and it works.
Yeah. If you mean it, well, if you mean what you're doing, then you can get away with drama in a kung fu movie.
Aye, definitely.
This is familiar to you after having seen the various Fok Yong-gap movies, and I guess having seen Fearless helps a bit too. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, Fearless didn't go back to his childhood as such, right? It was only from one point in Jet Li's adult life to the death of the character. Yeah?
I think.
But regardless, the main part of the movie is Jet Li as an adult. Aye. And all that. So.
Mm-hmm. Aye. Well, the first half of Fearless starts off with him being a child. It depends on the director's cut switches it all around.
Right, so because
fights is the very end of the movie.
Okay, because it's like it's Night Singh who's his master, right?
Aye.
Okay, now I remember that. I've only seen the director's cut.
Night Singh's his father. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, definitely, it does have maybe about 20 minutes at the start of him as a child, but it all depends on the print you see.
Yeah.
So.
But only see the director's cut. That's my recommendation. It seemed like the best version.
So, I really can't say much else about Legend of a Fighter than what hasn't already been said out there already. So, Ken, take the mic.
Right, it's not really the last movies watched, but I was keen to talk of this movie that I saw recently. It's called The Young Dragons, directed by John Woo. And this I've seen. I saw it on VCD by Joy Sales, and wasn't too impressed by it. It's a fairly good basher, and it has good, mature ideas that would develop later into very well-honed ideas and train of thoughts from John Woo. But this is like his either first or second movie. But the thing is, it reportedly was made like as an indie flick in 73, but picked up by Golden Harvest in 1975, who released it, didn't produce it, but released it. It also suffered censor cuts at the time, which I'll talk of in a little bit. So, in short, I mean, it's no use going over the story, really. I just want to say that you have a director with ideas about style and themes that he picked up probably when working alongside Chang Cheh at Shaw Brothers. He was assistant director for him for a few movies or for a number of years. But this inspiration, John is not able to put it to full use. It was to come, but the very, like, non-distinctive plot with Henry Jung as the lead, as this robber that he steals ammunition belonging to the rich. This whole plot feels very sketchy because, you know, that's fact that it's sketchy becomes even more apparent because it, I don't know if this makes sense, but it doesn't, it clearly doesn't want to be a sketchy plot. It wants to be a kind of deep felt plot with mature passages, and it kind of is, but then you don't get all character connections that are supposed to mean a lot. Henry Jung bumps into, I think it's like Lao Kong's character, and it seems to mean a lot, but it doesn't really translate to the audience. And but John would soon develop in really well, and especially Last Hurrah for Chivalry, his swordplay movies, that you know, one of his finest with well-developed ideas, and it's such a great action movie and all of that. The Young Dragons turns out to be a pretty good action movie, a basher, when you see it uncut. And here's the problem. On VCD in Hong Kong, it's sourced from the cinema print, and it has some censor cuts, obvious ones, but it has around about 6 or 7 minutes of fight footage just plain missing. And at the time, I didn't notice it as such, but when playing the French remastered DVD, it's actually on Hong Kong DVD as well, but non-remastered, if you're playing them side by side, the action scenes, you see there's like chunks just crudely lifted out. And I'm not talking about 2 seconds here, 2 seconds here, 1 minute here, 2 minutes here, 30 seconds here. Hmm. And if this was the idea of censoring, then it's like they got this task. Censor 6 minutes of this movie, please. And then they just crudely cut shit out. And it actually makes the rather hard-hitting bashing scenes and all of that. It's not smooth kung fu, it's just fighting. It makes them lose a hell of a lot of impact when you see it uncut. And it's actually co-directed action by Jackie Chan. And Fong Hakon, I believe, is the other action director who's also the bad guy in this movie, and a vicious bad guy. Imagine Fong Hakon as vicious in these movies. He has a rape scene in this movie as well. He does an Iron Fisted Monk as well, as people know. And this rape scene, by the way, is the one scene that the Hong Kong DVD does not have. It has all the fight footage reinstated, but the rape scene is cut, but it's present on the French remastered DVD. So they source the full uncut one. And it becomes a lot more memorable when the action is intact, and especially the end fight with Henry Jung and Fong Hakon. It's just insane how much is taken out of it. And I just don't notice that stuff until I compare it. You know what I mean? It turns an energetic end from the beginning in cut form to a really, really violent and very memorable bashing ending. And I would recommend The Young Dragons, therefore. You can see all the fighting on the Hong Kong DVD by Joy Sales. And it comes recommended if you want to track John Woo's development as director. It started here, and it was not bad considering he was a first-time director, essentially. So yeah, The Young Dragons is now watchable again. And you know what? I think it's actually, I haven't seen Kick-Ass yet, but I heard it's referenced in Kick-Ass.
Hmm. Nicolas Cage gives his daughter a pop quiz, and they ask John Woo's first feature-length like movie.
Yep.
And the last year rattles at the Cantonese title.
That's fucked up, and it's great. You know, I don't know if Matthew Vaughn wrote the script or co-wrote the script, but whoever put that in, like, kudos. You know, that's nerd points.
Aye, that got a giggle out of me.
Young Dragons.
They looked at me and said, did you know that? I was like, no.
Of course I don't know that. I secretly knew that. I don't want to appear too, nerdy.
Well then, it's back to you again to reveal your number one pick.
On the edge of your seats, people. I know you have been waiting, and I'm sure you haven't forgotten about this top three list at all. I'm sure it's right at the front of your brain. Sarcasm. All right, the number one movie, Girl with the Long Hair. Shaw Brothers movie, actually. But not a kung fu movie at all. It's a erotic comedy from 1975, directed by Ho Fun, who I mentioned earlier in the show. And he was an actor initially at Shaw Brothers. He played Monk Tang in the Shaw Brothers Journey to the West adaptation that they did across four movies, starting with, what the hell was the first movie called? The Monkey Goes West, I think it was. But regardless, they did four movies there. And he was worked behind the scenes, but eventually got to be a director. And he had ideas of making, you know, visually interesting erotic. And, you know, anybody, it seems like, could shoot porn that is, you know, well lit and all of that. And it's still about, you know, ass fucking and cum shots and all of that. But obviously, this isn't hardcore, by the way. But he had a gift for especially comedy and erotica, but also made some really wonderful visual movies like Yui Poi Sen in 1986. But Girl with Long Hair is, I always like Ho Fun making comedy and erotica at the same time. And it's insanely creative visually, and it features a hilarious, dopey performance by Wai Wang. It was a Shaw Brothers player that's been in, he plays a bad guy in a lot of period movies, actually. And he gets to represent the weak male who, like, sees this girl with the long hair, which is the actor Dana, is, you know, obsessed with her. He must have her at any price, you know, and he goes to shameless levels to get her, you know, to, he'd rather show that he's a weak, dopey male, you know, getting pants. It's kind of that thing. So obviously it's a satire in a way. It isn't a favorable view of men as such. What needs to happen in Girl with the Long Hair, based on how it's set up and all of that, it needs to have a striking female lead, and it happens in female lead Dana's case. It needs to be an intended breakout performance and a visual representation of the girl everybody wants. It's a perfect image of the female everybody stops dead in their tracks for. And her entrance is always accompanied by theme music as well, which is a kind of na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. It's the 70s, so it's appropriate for its time. Mm-hmm. And it's not as much exploitation as you might think, as Ho Fun, again, make sure this portrayal of the males are, you know, they are horny dogs. And that's what it is. But obviously he shoots Dana in a way that, you know, draws in the male crowd who wants to watch the movie as well. But he makes her look good, and I think she was very appreciative of that as well. He stumbled slightly towards the end, but it, not enough to prevent a permanent image to a permanent image is burned into a memory of Dana. But the question is, for people who watch the movie, you can have this question in the back of your head: is she the devil? It kind of may. It's an interesting thought process to have for this, and it's a wonderful, well-made Shaw Brothers erotic comedy shot in Thailand, I believe. So it's not one of those studio-bound Shaw Brothers movies at all times. That's the number one movie. I enjoy the hell of this, the hell out of this, and it's it makes you smile,
right?
No, because it's so wonderfully made and infectious to watch, the kind of atmosphere and all that. And I have to single out briefly one sequence that is set in. He follows Dana around, obviously trying to get near her, and he finds her in like essentially a sex dungeon, right? But it isn't. The sequence isn't as hardcore and graphic as that, and Ho Fun, who was also the cinematographer, does a few in-camera solutions, visual solutions that are really, really cool. One involves a fire that essentially gets aligned so they appear in the eyes of the male lead, Wai Wang. Hmm. So essentially he has fire in his eyes, he's seeing fire, he's perhaps in hell or something like that, and He has playtime with his camera that really works out the whole fun. And he was active until the 90s. He made the Temptation Summary films that has another permanent image of the cat-free Superman. Lee Chung-ling appears as mm-hmm. the cat-free Superman in the first one, and they bring that image back in the second unrelated one that is this wonderful behind-the-scenes look at the shady Category 3 film business. So they're shooting a movie within the movie with the Category 3 Superman, and one of the most wonderful images from that film is that every Category 3 script has a pre-printed Category 3 symbol on it in gold. So it's like, here it is. This is this kind of script. Mm-hmm. So I like that. It's a wonderful movie. So that's a later movie where he mixed comedy and erotica very well. Mm-hmm. And the last one is I just watched a few weeks ago that I'm going to review as well. The Sichuan Concubines, this quite arthousey, abstract, but a visually interesting movie. So that will be reviewed on SoGoodReviews.com and Lisa K's video.
Awesome. That's us, really.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Cool.
Yeah, a nice little banter. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Happy New Year, Stuart. I enjoyed the hell out of this year with you, so hopefully we'll have a good 2011 as well.
Exactly. Keep the ball rolling.
Yeah.
We hopefully have some new guests for our shows, for some of our new shows, and bring back some welcome friends. So we'll catch up with you guys in 2011. I've been your host for this evening. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Kenneth Bolson.
See you next year.